All right, good afternoon. First of all, I'll start with we have no financial disclosures. And the topics to be covered today will be AI in Parkinson's disease and AI in Alzheimer's disease. I am Dr. Anne Slosuritis. I was an academic hospitalist and core faculty member, teaching internal medicine residents and medical students for over 20 years. Was also during that time assistant professor at Loyola University School of Medicine. Currently, I'm a primary care physician at the Ann Kiley Center in Waukegan, Illinois, providing care for autistic adults. And I'm also the executive vice president of the American College of Artificial Intelligence in Medicine. So today I'll be speaking on Parkinson's. I'll cover five papers from 2025. First paper is AI-enabled Parkinson's disease screening using smile videos. So Parkinson's disease diagnosis, it's challenging owing to inefficient access to clinical care. We present an efficient and accessible artificial intelligence-driven PD screening method, leveraging the largest video data set of facial expressions from 1,452 unique participants, including 392 with PD, 300 of whom have been clinically diagnosed, and 91 of whom were self-reported. The rest of them were healthy participants. The study recruited individuals across multiple countries, primarily North America, via social media, email outreach, and a PD research registry. Patients undergoing in-person PD assessments at U.S. clinics and clinics of a U.S.-based PD wellness center and their caregivers, and the individuals in Bangladesh identified as being at high risk for PD. Participants used an online tool to record themselves, either at home or in a clinical setting, mimicking three facial expressions: smile, disgust, and surprise. Facial landmarks and action unit-based features were extracted to quantify the hypomania. Machine learning models were trained on these features to distinguish between individuals with and without PD. The model's generalizability was tested on external test data sets from US clinics and Bangladesh. So this is a picture that's showing at the top. You see the facial expression, and it's looking at eyebrows, it's looking at the mouth, at the lips, and the lower part is showing how the AI models are actually being trained on this incoming data. So the results: an ensemble of models trained on smile videos achieved an accuracy of 87.9%, and the area under the receiver operating curve was 89.3%, with a sensitivity of 76%, specificity of 91%. Just to put that in a little bit more better perspective, the sensitivity again, 76%, specificity 91%. Positive predictive value 73%, negative predictive value 92%. Area under the curve is 89.3%. So the interpretation: high specificity and a negative predictive value of 92% makes this test well suited for ruling out the condition in individuals who test negative. However, moderate sensitivity of 76% indicates that non-negligible proportion of true cases may be missed. The positive predictive value of 73% suggests that a positive result should be interpreted with caution, especially if disease prevalence is low. Confirmatory testing may be needed. So it's strong at confirming negatives, which mean good for screening or triage. Can use it in context where missing a case is acceptable and follow-up testing is available. And why is the sensitivity lower while the area under the curve is high? Well, the AUC evaluates how well the test performs across all thresholds, whereas the reported sensitivity and specificity are based on one specific decision threshold. So in summary, hypomania, which is reduced facial expressions, is considered an early and sensitive PD biomarker linked to dopamine-related neuronal loss. Artificial intelligence based facial video analysis offers the possibility of remote PD screening via computers and smartphones. So prior studies have experienced challenges collecting data at scale, leading to key limitations related to small laboratory-based data sets, including risks of overfitting and limited demographic diversity that undermines generalizability. So the results support webcam-based facial expressivity analysis as a convenient, accessible, and cost-effective PD screening method that can be especially suitable in regions with limited access to neurologic evaluations. Although the study is encouraging, it states that further research is needed to assess its utility for early PD detection and passive smartphone-based screening. So the next article is AI-assisted ophthalmic imaging for early detection of neurodegenerative diseases. The background. So artificial intelligence plays a promising role in ophthalmic imaging by providing innovative, non-invasive tools for early detection of neurodegenerative diseases, such as Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. Since early diagnosis is crucial for slowing disease progression and improving patient outcomes, leveraging AI-assisted ophthalmic retinal imaging can enhance detection accuracy and clinical decision-making. The methods used. This review examines clinical applications of AI in identifying retinal biomarkers associated with neurodegenerative diseases. Relevant data gathered through a comprehensive literature review using PubMed, ScienceDirect, and Google Scholar to evaluate studies using AI algorithms for retinal imaging analysis, focusing on diagnostic performance, sensitivity, specificity, and clinical relevance. So the results. AI-assisted ophthalmic imaging retinal images enhances the early identification of neurodegenerative diseases by detecting microscopic, structural, and vascular changes in the retina. Studies have demonstrated that AI models analyzing optical coherence tomography, OCT, which is light waves used to create high-resolution cross-sectional images of tissue, and fundus images achieve high diagnostic accuracy. So studies have reported an area under the curve of up to 0.918 in PD detection, with the sensitivity ranging from 80% to 100%, and specificity up to 85%. So similarly, AI-assisted OCT angiography analysis has successfully identified retinal vascular alterations in AD patients, correlating with cognitive decline in an area under the curve of 0.7 to 0.91. These findings highlight AI's potential to detect preclinical disease stages before significant neurologic symptoms manifest. So, what are retinal biomarkers? This refers to measurable structural or vascular changes in the retina that correlate with underlying neurodegenerative disease. So, biomarkers typically include neuronal layer thinning, such as retinal nerve fiber layer thinning, ganglion cell layer, and inner plexiform layer thinning observed in Parkinson's disease, as well as Alzheimer's disease and multiple sclerosis. The microvascular changes identified are reduced vessel density, increased vessel tortuosity, and capillary plexus abnormalities, which are seen in PD and AD. Changes in retinal thickness or vascular structure often mirror neurodegenerative processes in the brain even before symptoms appear. These elements are not easily visible during routine eye exams, but imaging modalities like the OTC and OTCA can be utilized to detect very small differences in the retinal layers. Biomarker evaluation represents a non-invasive, quantifiable, and potentially early method to screen or monitor these conditions, going beyond what the conventional eye exams can detect. So, on this chart, you can see at the top how AI integrates into the diagnostic pathway. Do the imaging with the OTC or OTCA, and then look at the biomarker analysis. There's cross-referencing, and the physician then can decide to initiate diagnostic procedures, following up with consultation and follow-up, and then long-term monitoring. In summary, AI-assisted ocular imaging can help with early detection of neurodegenerative diseases, such as Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. AI algorithms can identify minimal retinal alterations, which are thinning of the retinal nerve fiber layer and microvascular changes associated with AD and PD and other neurodegenerative diseases. So finally, collaboration between the ophthalmologist and neurologist is crucial to maximize the benefits of AI-assisted ophthalmic imaging diagnostics. AI should function as an assistive tool rather than a replacement for clinical expertise. Physicians must critically evaluate the AI outputs. AI should serve as an initial screening tool. Final verification remains with human specialists to help decrease the AI-related diagnostic errors and optimize patient care. The integration of AI technologies into ophthalmic imaging holds the potential to improve early diagnosis and transform patient outcomes. However, challenges such as model interpretability, dataset biases, and ethical considerations must be addressed to ensure the responsible integration of AI into clinical practice. So future research should focus on refining AI algorithms, integrating multimodal imaging techniques, and developing predictive biomarkers to optimize early intervention strategies for neurodegenerative diseases. The next paper, automatic analysis of eyelid movement in de novo Parkinson's disease. So this study represents an automated objective method for eyelid movement assessment in de novo, which is treatment naive, Parkinson's disease using a one-dimensional camera. These measurements were related to dopamine transporter, single photon emission topography, and clinical score. What does that mean? That means how much dopamine activity is really happening. So state-of-the-art computer vision technologies and deep learning neural networks were utilized to measure 14 eyelid movement markers describing blinking and eyelid kinematics. Video recordings were collected from a total of 120 de novo patients with PD and 55 healthy controls. What they found was abnormal blinking was present in 38% of PD, indicated by a reduced blink rate, an increased inter-blink interval, and increased rigidity of the palpebral aperture, with very good P scores. The validation of the diagnostic accuracy of the best performing markers on the blink test resulted in an area under the curve of 0.81, with an accuracy of 71.4%, sensitivity 62%, specificity 90.9%. The blink rate correlated with the loss of nigral dopaminergic neurons. These findings suggest that eyelid movement markers are a strong reflection of striatal dopaminergic activity levels, underscoring the method's potential as a reliable early Parkinson's disease biomarker. So the key points of this study: researchers developed an automated system using high-speed video and machine learning to analyze eyelid movements, detection of motor impairments in people with Parkinson's disease. Objective and reproducible. It eliminates variability in human evaluation. It requires only a simple camera setup, non-invasive and cost-effective. Potential for early screening in areas without advanced imaging. There's monitoring and therapy, so continuous eye tracking could help monitor disease progression and evaluate treatment effectiveness. Combining this with other data, such as gait and speech data, could yield multimodal diagnostic tools. Some limitations: so limited sample and single center design, generalizability comes into question. Lack of medication state comparison because they were all de novo. Narrow focus on eyelid metrics. Possible environmental and technical constraints. So performance might vary with lighting conditions, camera quality, patient positioning, or even video clarity. The next paper is Explainable Artificial Intelligence to Diagnose Early Parkinson's Disease via Voice Analysis. So the background: Parkinson's disease, neurodegenerative disorder affecting motor control, leading to symptoms such as tremors and stiffness. Early diagnosis is essential for treatment, but traditional methods are often time-consuming and expensive. This study makes effective use of artificial intelligence and machine learning techniques using voice analysis to detect early signs of Parkinson's. This diagnostic tool will primarily be a proof of concept that vocal data alone can train a model to diagnose Parkinson's disease. So the methods applied a hybrid model combining convolutional neural networks, recurrent neural networks, multiple kernel learning, and multi-layer perceptron to a database set of 81 voice recordings. Acoustic features such as Mel frequency, sepstral coefficients, which is MFCC, jitter, and shimmer were analyzed. So let's talk about what all this means. Everyone knows what CNN, convolutional neural network, AI that learns to recognize patterns in visual or spatial data like shapes in a picture or pitch changes in a voice. Recurrent neural networks, sequential data such as time, speech, or audio by remembering previous inputs. The multiple kernel learning, MKL, is a method of machine learning and AI that are combined to improve the performance of algorithms. It learns from different types of data representations at once. Kernel measures similarities between data points. Multi-layer perceptron, MLP, it's a deep learning model. Multiple layers of neurons connected to every neuron in the next layer is reviewed. The Mel frequency sepstral coefficient, it's a set of numbers that represents the spectrum of sound. The Mel scale captures how the energy in a voice signal is distributed across different frequencies. In PD, there can be changes in speech articulation. So the MFCCs can detect subtle shifts in voice track shape or muscle control, even before they're obvious to the human ear. So jitter, what is that? It measures the variability in voice pitch. So example, in Parkinson's, they may have a shaky or unstable pitch. So the voice wobbles when you say, that's wobbling. Shimmer measures the variability in amplitude or loudness of the vocal fold vibration. Example, PD patients' voice may quiver between louder or softer during a steady note. So, So the result of this study, the model achieved a 91.11% accuracy and an area under the curve of 0.9125. So shapely additive explanations, or SHAP, provided data explainability, identifying key features driving PD diagnosis, thus enhancing AI interpretability and trustability. Furthermore, a probability-based scoring system was developed to enable PD patients and clinicians to track disease progression. This AI-driven approach offers a non-invasive, cost-effective, and rapid tool for early PD detection, facilitating personalized treatment through vocal biomarkers. So on this chart here, what's important is the red. So the red has the four models that were used: MLP, CNN, RNN, and MKL. So you can see in every aspect, using these four models increased the accuracy, precision, recall, and the F score. Here, the area under the curve, the red line, is depicted by, again, the same four models. So key points of this article. It's a hybrid of deep learning models. It has a high diagnostic performance, 91% accuracy. So what that means is out of all voice samples, healthy and PD, the model correctly identified 91.1%. So the precision of all people, the model said that had PD, 89.84% actually did. For the F score accuracy, this is a balanced average of precision and recall. So great balance between catching real cases and avoiding mistakes. Area under the curve measures how well the model separated PD from healthy cases. So use of explainability, which is the SHAP, it's a method of machine learning that helps you understand why a model made a specific prediction. They applied the SHAP to identify which acoustic features, example, jitter, shimmer, MFCCs, most influenced the model's output. Non-invasive and scalable tool. It's rapid, cost-effective, non-invasive, and can be used for early PD screening via voice analysis. Limitations: small and single data set. The model was trained and tested on only 81 voice recordings. So there are concerns about generalizability to larger or more diverse populations. There's limited modalities, so reliance on voice alone. So the MFCCs, the jitter, the shimmer means the model sensitivity may decrease if other acoustic or physiologic features are relevant but omitted. There could be a risk of data bias. The data set may not reflect demographic diversity. And there's a need for real-world validation. So you need to confirm it on a larger, noisy, uncontrolled conditions that would be typical of home or real-world recordings. Okay, the last paper is optimizing wrist-worn wearables, wearable compliance with insights from two Parkinson's disease cohort studies. So wearable technologies enable real-time, continuous, non-invasive data collection, where long-term compliance is essential. The Personalized Parkinson's Project, PPP, and the Parkinson's Progression Markers Initiative, PPMI, utilized the Verily Study Watch. Participants, including people diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, prodromal disease, which is early, and healthy controls, were instructed to wear the watch for up to 23 hours a day without data displaying or reporting data back to the participant. So, just a side note, the PPMI is an ongoing longitudinal observational study launched by Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's research in 2010. So, back to the study. Compliance measures the user experiences were evaluated. A centralized support model identified barriers to data collection and enabled proactive outreach. So this is all about compliance and not necessarily the data they found related to Parkinson's. So the median daily wear time was 21.9 hours for PPP and 21.1 to 22.2 hours per day for the PPMI over 2 years. Participants were highly motivated, contributing to PD research. These results highlight strategies for achieving strong engagement without providing individual data. So this approach offers valuable insights for study designs where returning data to participants could introduce bias or affect the data integrity. So on this chart, it just gives you the HNY stage. And it gives you the MDS, UPD, RS. All of this tells you about the severity of the disease for the participants. And it looks like for HNY, majority is in stage two. And also part three on the off state for the MDS. So all about disease severity between the two groups. These graphs will show you the very top one goes to 3 minutes. The subsequent ones go until 2 minutes. So you can see in the PPMI, it just drops off a little bit towards the end, getting near 2 minutes or 2 years, excuse me, getting near 2 years. So key points of this article is the study focused on observing compliance without introducing potential biases that feedback might create. There's high initial wear compliance. The design, the comfort, aesthetics have a strong impact on adherence. There's strong engagement and compliance was achieved despite no individual data feedback. So for the future, AI wearable models can ingest large data sets and may open up new research in the following areas: early detection of disease through continuous monitoring, personalized treatment, possibly minimizing side effects, real-time adaptive interventions to guide treatment, and empower patients to take an active role in their health management to motivate behavior change and improve adherence to treatment plans. Also, enhance clinical decision-making by providing clinicians with more comprehensive and dynamic understanding of diagnoses, treatment plans, and patient management. Reduced healthcare costs due to early detection, which may prevent hospitalizations and emergency room visits. So instead of telling you what I was going to cover at the beginning, I'm going to tell you what we just did cover. So we covered AI and Parkinson's related to evaluation of smiles, AI-assisted ophthalmic biomarkers, AI analysis of eyelid movement, AI and voice analysis, and AI related to wearables. So thank you so much for your time, and I will turn it over to Dr. Melvin Spiceman.
So I'll be talking about Alzheimer's disease, but just quickly about me, I'm the president of the American College of AI in Medicine and practiced as an academic hospitalist, teaching residents and medical students, and most recently an assistant professor at the University of Illinois and here in Chicago. But now working at the intersection of AI and medicine, doing a lot of research and education. And that's part of our session today is to teach you guys about the latest in AI and neurology. So there's a lot of intersection between the Parkinson's methods of deploying AI and Alzheimer's. There's a lot of overlap. I will show the papers that relate to the retina, to the eye tracking, speech and voice, wearables. Also, we'll talk about MRI and also some multimodal strategies. And at the end, we will just briefly tell you about the FDA-approved devices that relate to these two diseases. But regarding the retina or oculomics, as was pointed out, the key thing to look at is RNFL, which is retinal nerve fiber layer, and its thickness. And that really has a strong link to the degree of Alzheimer's disease as well as its progression. So, what we know is that if you do this optical coherence tomography, you can identify those individuals at risk of undergoing cognitive decline. And that the measurement in the change of the RNFL is critical in correlating with cognitive decline. A really good s studies were done at the UK with the UK Biobank. In over 30,000 patients, they found that the thinning of the RNFL was associated with a lower mini mental status exam score. And that if you follow those patients over 3 years, the thinner the RNFL, the more likely they will perform poorly 3 years out. The Rotterdam study also found that thinner RNFL was associated with an increased risk of developing dementia and that it could be a very good biomarker in early dementia. A lot of the AI in this area is machine learning, and most of the initial work was with fundus photographs. So this paper is a nice look at all these different methods, but there's really three ways to approach this. One is just a color fundus photograph and having AI read that. The other is this optical coherence tomography, and then the additional way is OCT angiography. All of these actually work if you use AI as a tool to predict the development or progression of Alzheimer's disease. Studies have shown with the fundus photograph that you could see significant differences between Alzheimer's disease patients and controls. And these are several studies here showing that. The one I want to highlight for you, the most recent one here, just from 2025, is the OCTA or the angiography. And in this particular study, they used 5,751 images. It's a multi-center trial. They found an area under the curve of 0.9355. So really what we're getting at is biomarkers. And this is a really very thorough review of the different biomarkers we can apply AI to track Alzheimer's disease and predict its progression. So we can look at the eye, not just the retina, but eye tracking. We can look at the speech, limb movements, gait walking. In terms of the type of AI that these studies are using, the top bar is the most common machine learning method for any of these tools, which is support vector, followed by logistic regression and random forest. So that these three capture the majority of the method of AI that's being used. In this review, they were very comprehensive, looked at PubMed and many other databases, found 431 studies, over 1,400 institutions, 44 countries. But in the take home is that there's 21 Alzheimer's disease focus models that have an average area under the curve of 0.887. And there's 45 models for mild cognitive impairment with error under the curve of 0.821. So in sum total, we have a lot of biomarker methods we can use AI for with Alzheimer's disease. This is just very recently published in PLOS. It's from June, and it was looking at voice. Just like they were doing for Parkinson's, they're looking at voice for cognitive decline in Alzheimer's disease. In this study, all they needed was a short conversational voice sample. And using that alone, the AI model had an accuracy of 0.950 to discriminate between patients with dementia and normal individuals. Wearables, obviously, is a strategy that is being applied, but this wearable was kind of unique, and I think you'll find interesting in that it was essentially an EEG that was a single lead. This was measurement of polysomnography and wearable device, EEG and accelerometry, 67 adults that were without cognitive problems and 35 Alzheimer's disease patients. And this wearable had an accuracy of 0.90 with a single channel EEG. I have a couple good diagrams to show how this was done. You could see the wearable was placed behind the ear, and there was an EEG cradle, and it was done during sleep. And it was very effective at predicting dementia. Back to the imaging piece or MRI, there are many papers looking at applying artificial intelligence as a way of reading the MRI and diagnosing Alzheimer's disease. This is a nice table of a lot of the important papers on this. So it does work, but the one that I'm going to present to you from Nature Scientific Reports was a convolutional neural network that was more accurate at Alzheimer's disease classification than all these previous trials. And they used three different pre-trained convolutional neural networks. AlexNet, which is the original one, and then GoogleNet, MobileNet V2, and this model had an impressive 99.4% ability to classify. And when they tested it on open access series of imaging studies, OASIS 98.2%. So, really good results using this CNN approach. What was nice about it is that they could fine-tune pre-trained models in a scenario where you didn't have a large data set. So key things that make this recent study really important: CNN architecture. It was the authors noted that compared to all these other trials I showed you, the ability to detect Alzheimer's disease very early was quite good. That the hope there is that perhaps we could intervene early. And then the final paper that I want to talk about, which I think is probably the most important, is multimodal. As you may know, the next frontier in all that we do in AI and medicine is the multimodal approach, meaning we input history, we input physical, we input imaging data, perhaps lab data. So that's how we think as physicians. We, reason with all these data points. So that's the multimodal strategy. And this is a really nice paper demonstrating good results doing an AI multimodal strategy for Alzheimer's disease. It had 51,269 patients. It looked at 10 different dementia etiologies. The area under the curve was 0.94 in categorizing people as either normal, mild cognitive impairment, or dementia. And the area under the curve was 0.96 in differentiating what type of dementia. And if you add this in your toolkit as a neurologist, you will improve your area under the curve in diagnosing people by 26%. So definitely a value to add that to your armamentarium. So this multimodal framework harnessed a diverse array of data. Demographic data, personal data, family history, medication, neuropsychological assessment, imaging. It categorized or labeled the patients with either normal cognition, mild cognitive impairment, dementia, Alzheimer's, or one of these other subtypes of dementia. It inputted demographics, health history, physical, neurological testing, MRI scans. So I really like this strategy more than just a single mode of in terms of the things we've looked at previously. Each data type was transformed into a fixed length vector using a tailored approach. So this transformer strategy was really good. In terms of the patient population, it was very well balanced. Equal number of male and female, and a very diverse panel of patients of all ethnicities. And 19,000 were categorized as normal cognition, 9,000 as mild cognitive impairment, and 22,000 as dementia. And they tapped into all these open source data sets of dementia patients. So just a nice pearl for you if you're looking for a large number of data set points that you can access to do research. This is a really comprehensive list of all the different places that they tapped into for data. And they even have the code available, Python scripts. Anything you would want to recreate this trial could be found open access on GitHub. So we're going to talk at the end here. So far, it was all the trials. I just want to make you aware of what is FDA approved. We haven't presented the trials around any of these FDA approved devices. Unlike drugs, the rigorous trials aren't necessarily part of the AI as a medical device. Let's start with Alzheimer's disease and then we'll look at Parkinson's disease. But it's just really interesting to see what's been approved just in the last 1 to 2 years and how they work. So for Alzheimer's disease, AIRA score became available in September 2023. What that does is, again, it's reading the MRI. Specifically quantifying the brain volume as a way of both diagnosing and tracking dementia. Then GE has a tool called MIM Neuro that will look at the PET scan and quantify how much amyloid plaque and tau tangle is present. Interestingly, Siemens also has a similar product that called Singo that will look at centiloid, amyloid, and tau protein as on reading a PET scan. Then there's BrainC, which is a prognosis predictive platform. It was approved in January of 2024, and it basically predicts progression by combining MRI data with MMSE data, and it generates a 5-year risk of progression from mild cognitive impairment to Alzheimer's disease. In May of 2025, they just launched a 7-year post-market trial. So it'll be some time before we have the kind of data that we presented in terms of these other studies today. IcoBrain is a software to look at MRI with AI to detect amyloid on the MRI. And now we move on to Parkinson's. This is for the DBS. So now the DBS for Parkinson's has a AI closed loop as part of the system. This was just approved in February of this year, just a few days before my birthday. And it gives real-time adjustments, sensing brain rhythms. And there is a trial, but only 68 patients, called ADAPT-PD, showing high retention and no serious adverse events. And then Neural RPM is an AI-powered mobile app for the Apple Watch that was approved in March of 2023. So those that are wearing the Apple Watch, it will continuously and passively monitor the bradykinesias, the tremors, and the dyskinesias, detecting subtle fluctuations. It does require a prescription, interestingly. Other companies have competing apps for the Apple Watch, like ParkKey is a similar one for tremors, dyskinesia, and bradykinesia. That same company makes Foggy, which was approved in April 2024 to detect using the Apple Watch the vibrotactile cueing feature for freezing of gait in Parkinson's disease. So the app detects freezing and triggers a gentle vibration on the wrist to cue movement and help patients regain their gait. So I think that's an extremely thorough and comprehensive list of what's FDA available for these two diseases as of today. But really, the take-home message for both Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease is we can get a lot of information from a retinal image, from the person's voice, from wearables, and that could be an inexpensive and quick screen that we could potentially do even in countries that maybe don't have good access to care. But for those that have good access to care or at the higher end level, we really should use the CNN to look at MRI images of these patients. And the part I'm most excited about, I hope you could tell from my tone, was using a multimodal approach because that most closely resembles how we practice as physicians. If you liked what you heard today and you would like to be a collaborator in one of our virtual research lab groups, you have our email. If you're interested in having us do a talk at your institution, you can also reach out. We speak usually 3 to 4 times a week in the US or globally around all aspects of AI and patient care. And we have a really robust research arm with over 25 lab groups and faculty nationwide and worldwide. You can go to our website if you'd like to become a member. We are a not-for-profit professional society. Think of us as similar to the American Academy of Neurology, but for AI and medicine. And then we are having our first annual scientific session in Chicago at McCormick Place. The format of that session will be very similar to today. It's going to be the evidence-based papers presented by the best of the best faculty nationwide. In addition to this type of format, we are having hands-on workshops, panel discussions, a lot of networking. We have abstract and poster competitions and submission for your abstract or poster, if you're interested, is up until August the 1st. And the very last link at the bottom here on the Four Waves is our conference platform that allows registration, uploading of abstracts and posters. If we can be of assistance to you guys in any way around the intersection of AI and medicine, we're available and interested in helping with both education and research. And we're going to turn it over to questions at this point.
Thank you again for the both of you for providing this very broad overview. Before we get into nitty-gritty, maybe it'd be nice to hear a little bit more about the organization that you guys have started and where does it come from? What is the mission? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. Thanks for that. So I realized while I was a faculty member at the University of Illinois that most of the invited speakers were like this talk today. They were the best and the brightest, many actually from the Harvard hospitals. And the talks, each time we had grand rounds or an invited guest lecture or even a keynote, was always around AI. So I met a lot of amazing faculty from all across the nation, and I realized that there might be a need for a professional society similar to what you guys do in neurology or what we do for internal medicine, an organization where we can all gather and have conferences and have, a way to network and do research and teaching together. So about a year ago, we launched the American College of Artificial Intelligence and Medicine and modeled it very similar to American College of Physicians, which is the internal medicine organization, which we've been very active in for over 25 years. So that's kind of how it got started. And since that time, we've been doing a lot of robust research with amazing people like you guys, and have had a lot of outreach in terms of speaking engagements at a lot of major conferences, both here in the US and globally. And most of our efforts now have been on planning this first conference, this true evidence-based scientific session, which is really designed for academic physicians. It's not the typical industry AI conference. This is the true science, the kind of work that you guys are doing in your own labs. And so a lot of very excited, like-minded individuals all across the nation collaborating with us on education and research. And Anne is going to say a few words as well.
So AI is here. It's exciting, and there's a renewed enthusiasm we're seeing in medicine now. There's so much excitement. But for many people, medicine people, lay people, everybody, it's kind of scary for some. So we spend a lot of time trying to educate people that it's not just who you talk to on the phone, for instance, the automation. They seem to think that that's what AI is, and we hear about some of the downsides of that. We really want to bring computer scientists and medicine together to improve patient care. And our emphasis is on education of AI in medicine, and our passion is teaching the next generation, mentoring the students, having them be in our lab groups with professors from all over the country and other countries as well, and collaborating together to educate each other and create something great for our patients and to continue educating each other.
That's cool. So I want to switch gears a little bit and poke both of you guys for this. For the uninitiated, some of the things that you guys were speaking about is, mind blowing. Oh my gosh, we can detect Alzheimer's, we can detect Parkinson's and so forth. And for the more jaded more nuanced audience, I think there's going to be a lot of questions about, like, are any of these things that you guys talked about really ready for prime time, including the FDA approved stuff? Like, how many of the things that you guys spoke about do you really think are reasonably deployable, and in what contexts? So I guess probably the same question for both of you.
Great. No, it's a fabulous question. That's why I wanted to highlight at the end what is actually available, and what we see is there's a huge disconnect between the medical literature, what has been done and proven scientifically, and what's deployed or available. So, and the other concern I have, and one of our main focuses at our conference each year is, physicians like us would like to see evidence before we use one of these AI tools. And so we're trying at our conference to really highlight those AI enabled devices that have rigorous randomized trials versus those that are available but haven't really been studied in a way that would make us feel comfortable with using them. So we are going to actually highlight ones that have really good data and trials around them, and we're going to really go deep dive at the conference on the papers, for example, that are in New England Journal AI that show, I'll give some really good examples outside of neurology. So there's a great one on sepsis and predicting sepsis that will really be impactful. There's another outstanding one on using it as an initial screen in the emergency room for acute MI and reducing the time to intervention. So there are really good studies out there for some things, but there are over 1,000 FDA cleared AI-enabled tools, and most of them have not undergone the rigorous trials. So we want to be a forum in which we can highlight for those practicing physicians what's the data, what's been proven, which of these algorithms have, great science behind them that we could say these are ready for prime time, and then for the others to have caution until there are good scientific studies to show their safety and effectiveness.
Okay, I'd like to jump in. So you asked, is it deployable? I see that a lot of them can be, but they need to go through the rigorous studies. Now, just kind of speculating, where do I see all of this happening? As I mentioned, with some of them, it could be done at home. It could be done at home with televisits, maybe a tool that could be done at home prior to a visit, say, with your primary care doctor or even with the neurologist if they were involved already. Now, I believe there's about 8 years of maybe symptoms before the diagnosis of Parkinson's is made. That really makes me sad. I think having all of these, calling attention to it, will actually call attention to screening earlier and maybe looking for this. And there's a lot of subtle changes. I don't know that I've ever seen people present the same way. I've seen Parkinson's over many years and diagnosed it many times in the hospital, but there's subtle changes. And so I think just having all this and calling attention to it will maybe make us more astute at actually looking for it, listening and observing. But I see some of these tools, like with the, well, the computer vision for the eye, but the blink, the voice, even, well, they didn't talk about writing, but writing as very easy deployable tools if we can go through the studies. I'm pretty excited about some of these.
Yeah, just on a bigger picture perspective, throughout the nation right now, as you guys have seen, the AI deployment has been pretty much limited to note writing in the clinic and patient portal responses, generating the note in the EMR. But in 2025, the radiology community is nationwide, especially at academic centers, deploying AI-enabled tools. So you will start to see the examples we showed in radiology where AI will be looking at an MRI or a PET scan. So that deployment is happening slowly throughout the nation. Some academic centers are taking a more robust initiative in doing that than others, but most academic centers now have a physician that is the chief AI officer, and they are really being given the task of figuring out which AI tools that the hospital or health system will be deploying. And most of that deployment, other than the note writing and the EMR right now, is in the field of radiology, which for neurology is really going to be impactful because it's going to be in the background, in the radiology departments, reading these images and giving you input. The wearable that was mentioned, that's just an app. I'll just tell you that for atrial fibrillation and for sleep apnea, those are just routinely accessible through the Apple Watch. The Parkinson's one, apparently, you need to prescribe it for your patient. So just be aware you could prescribe it. And the majority of Americans right now have a smartwatch. So you could easily use the app on the smartwatch for.
Very easy.
So that's a quick
Millions of people have it.
one. And then if you're ordering imaging, the radiologist is the one likely to be using it. And it's just there's, some caution with the deployment. So it is a slow process, but it is very much happening throughout the radiology departments in the US in a big way this year. But Danielle, I'll turn it back to you for some more
Well, you know what?
questions.
I'm gonna, if I can, we have a couple minutes, but I'd like to just play the devil's advocate for a moment. We'll discover all of this information, but what will we do with it? And how much will it actually change the course of the disease? That's what I'm concerned with. If you know 6 years in advance that you're going to have dementia or Parkinson's, what do you do with that? So I'm hoping our neurologist colleagues will figure all of that out, because I do worry about that. Be careful what you wish for. We find it, and then now we have to do something with it.
Okay. Well, we're coming right up to 4 o'clock here. So, thanks again for both of you for giving us this this comprehensive look at a number of different studies. And thanks again for your time. And I'll send you the recording once it kind of turns its way through.
Great.
All
Now,
right.
we do have a podcast in our organization, and for those listening, we're going to be interviewing Danielle for next week for our podcast, where we will continue this conversation around AI and neurology, and we will then get his perspective from the best of the best. So,
Yes,
looking
yes.
forward to having
Looking
you on
forward to it.
next.
Thanks for having us.
Okay.
If you enjoyed what you heard here today, Consider becoming a member of our professional society by going to www.americancollegeaim.org and click join. Also, don't forget to save the dates. September 19th and 20th, 2025, we'll be having our first ever scientific session at McCormick Place right here in Chicago. Go to our website to register to attend the conference. We hope to see you all live in Chicago, and we look forward to having you tune in to our next podcast on Melvin Monday here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.